episode 36. It is very, very hot in July. My name is Dave Hunt, and I'm joined by Michael Swick.
I don't go outside anymore, so I don't know what this heat you're talking about. My AC is working extra.
Okay, Hermit.
Hey, hey, hey. I am a stay-at-home hero.
So we are Digital Days Gaming. We are a weekly podcast, except for last week, but we still released something that took a little break last week just because news was very light, and we had our longest podcast episode ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And the feedback around our spoiler cast was very good, and we appreciate that, so thank you. It's always cool to hear someone say something about, you know, changing the way that our conversation changed the way they thought about the game a little bit, or gave them a different look at the game. So that's always kind of cool to see and to hear that, you know, people like that thing. Because we were very, very worried about how that was going to be perceived and how, like, in terms of rhythm and flow. So it sounds like you guys seem to really enjoy it. And as always, please send us feedback.
And it probably could have went longer, too. We didn't know how long we should have it, so we kind of, like, rushed it at the end a little bit.
Yeah, I remember sending you a message like, dude, we're an hour and 10 minutes in, and we're still on day one.
Like, yeah, but it was definitely one of those games that needed that time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So if you haven't listened to that yet, go back and listen to it, only if you finish the game. And if you haven't finished the game, you should play the game and finish the game.
Yes.
That's definitely something to do. And again, like we mentioned last week, news was pretty light. And the month of July is going to be, you know, pretty heavy with the Ubisoft event and the Xbox event and our weekly shows as we're getting closer and closer to August and closer to launching of the consoles and whatever our fall is going to look like for gaming. So we looked at this opportunity of like, okay, let's take a little breather, give you guys a little bit of chance to catch up because we release a lot of content in June. So, but with all of that content, if you guys could please just share it with your friends, review us on iTunes, on Podcast Addict, on any Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you can review us, please review us, give us however many stars you think we're worth, and please write something, even if it's just cool, I like it, any of that stuff is good, it shows and it moves us up in charts, and then obviously retweeting our tweets and sharing our stuff on Facebook feeds is always super, super helpful. Just getting more eyes on DDG and helping the community grow. All of the social links that we've been talking about are all linked in the show notes, so you can check them out there. Join the Facebook group, join the Discord. There's a spoiler chat in Discord. If I see anything crazy about video game spoilers in the Facebook group, I'll just delete it. So, because that's a little harder to control where you're going in there. So, and then following us on Twitch is a huge, huge help, and subscribing to us on YouTube is a huge help. I think we need to get to like 100 subscribers to be able to have our own personal URL. So I think for a little while ago, I was telling people youtube.com/digitaldaysgames, and that doesn't work.
No, that leads nowhere.
Yeah, until we get to 100 subscribers. So please get us to 100 subscribers, and that'll help us. So, you know, make a couple of YouTube accounts, maybe. I don't know. Do what you got to do.
Whatever you got to do. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. So, but yeah, pretty basic show. You know, we've got some excellent new stuff to talk about, and we're going to jump right into it.
Yeah, we're going to start off with some serious stuff, though, to begin before we get to, like, some of the more fun aspects in the news this week. While we were off, I think the week... Episode 35, there was starting to be some rumblings about the speaking out movement in terms of calling out people who are like abusers and sexual misconduct and just a bunch of allegations that were coming out in the gaming community. It was mostly focused on like the developer public relations side 2 weeks ago, and then it went over to Twitch.
It started in the influencer side, I feel like, and then that kind of bled into the developers and the PR, and then it kind of went back to the influencers again.
Yeah, then it went hard with Twitch, to where Twitch actually stepped up and started to do permabans. Some people, they permaban, they gave reasons. Other people, they haven't given any reason, but that could just be...
Dr. Disrespect.
Yeah, Dr. Disrespect. That could be some weird legality stuff that they just can't get into. That we might never know the answers from. But then last week... The fighting game community had dozens and dozens of story of various range of offenses being alleged all over the place. The Smash Brothers community especially was like very messed up. I don't even want to talk about some of the things that were brought up because it's like horrifying stuff. But one of the people that was accused of like sexual misconduct and like actually grosser things that, again, I don't want to really talk about on this gaming podcast. One of the co-founders of Evo was accused of various things. And it just kind of snowballed within a couple hours. Like I think late at night he was accused, and then in the morning Evo came out and basically said like, hey, we're gonna put him on like leave, like he's not with the company, he's on leave. And then a couple hours later NetherRealm left. They pulled sponsorship for the coming Evo month-long Evo tournament that was going to start July 4th weekend. And then Namco Bandai said they were leaving, and then Capcom said they were leaving, and then eventually snowballed to where a couple hours later, Evo just said, we're not doing Evo this year. And they, you know, denounced the co-founder, who put out an apology, basically kind of almost sounded like he like admitted to everything that was said, because he didn't really refute anything. He just put like the generic thing that we always see of just like, oh, I made mistakes in the past kind of bullshit. But some of the stuff he was accused of is like really bad stuff. So it makes sense why Evo wanted to pull away and why sponsors wanted to pull away. And this eventually just led to Evo just being canceled. And now there won't be an Evo month-long tournament, which I was kind of excited for.
Yeah, this sucks. But, like,
yeah,
the ramifications of what happens suck. Because people are just terrible lately. It seems like that we're finding out more and more people are just really bad, and the only way to get anything important to seem to happen is to take things away from people that enjoy it. So this sucks for the players that were going to participate in it. This sucks for the people that were going to watch it. This sucks for the games that were going to get shown off and get a cool spotlight on it, because a certain individual doesn't know how to handle himself in a public space.
Yeah, and all this stuff is just seems to be snowballing, and it sounds messed up, but it's almost good that all this is, you know, like being brought up finally, is because it's finally removing some very toxic people mm-hmm. from the various communities, and it seems to be rampant. And it's one of those things where I'm glad people are speaking out, because it's just shining a light on all the stuff that's going around, and we're only hearing about the stuff that's happening on like that to people that have a platform, but this happens everywhere.
Well, the people that have a platform and the people that feel comfortable enough and brave enough to even talk about it.
Yeah. And
which I would almost guess is like 10% of the people that are affected by it at the high.
Yeah. And the players that are like, or the influencers, it's so crazy. Like when I ended up doom scrolling Twitter for a couple days, because like every like 20 minutes you would like someone, there would be like a twit long for one player, you'd click it and then it'll lead to another player who's got alleged stuff, and then you had a lot of people just outright admitting that they did these horrible things
mm-hmm.
And then just going back to normal. Some of them disappeared, some people went back to normal, and we're talking about some serious crimes that were being committed by people.
And then people that are just insane. Going into other people's chats, and you know, like whether it's a streamer or, you know, going to their Twitter and you know, publicly attacking them and just being, you know, terrible people again. Like that's not helping the situation. That's not helping the person feel better. Like if this happened to you or to your daughter or to your wife, like you would feel tremendously different than you do, because it happened to your streamer and you don't want to see your streamer crying or talking about this stuff, is you just want to see your streamer play video games. But you got to remember, these people are human beings, and you know, this stuff happening to them, and that, and some of it had a lot to do with people thinking that this was just the way it had to be if they wanted to be successful. Like they had to almost like accept this role that they were having, and it's not. Like there are plenty of, and it's predominantly females, obviously, you know, there's plenty of very, very, very good and entertaining female streamers that I've read some of their stuff, and it's just crazy the things that happened to them. Some people that I've met personally and reading some of their stories of what's happened to them is just terrible. Like I can't, if somebody was to do something like that to my daughter, like I don't even, they probably wouldn't get out the door.
So. Yeah. It's one of those things where, like you said, like it's almost been like female entertainers and streamers, people in the industry had to almost accept that like there are bad people that work in the industry, and just hearing about like how they basically had to create like a whisper network to where it's just like, hey, you're going to go to this event, beware of that guy, beware of that guy, beware of that guy, but you still have to go to this event because you want to do well.
It's almost like they had a list.
Yeah, exactly. There was like lists out there of people that you shouldn't work with. So I'm glad finally the bad people are being called out, and the industry hopefully will be able to cleanse itself. It's never going to go away fully. No. We're never going to get a point where it's like fully gone away, but at least some sort of like purge can happen that we can like be rid of toxicity in gaming. But it's just... It was weird the last 2 weeks, just like going through Twitter, and then like
it's the COVID wave. It's the COVID wave. It's the racism wave. It's the harassment wave. There's so much stuff going on right now that, and I think a lot of it has to do with people at home more. They have more time to think about things. They have more time to react to things. But it doesn't help that the other people are at home that are just treating people like trash too, because they just have more time on their hands to do it now. So.
Yeah, because I ended up spending today just looking at, like, just all the stuff going around, and then just, like, kind of making my own list of just, like, okay, I'm never going to work with this person, I don't want to work with this person, and just making sure, you know, that, like, people that, like, we want to work with in the future are not people that have been accused of stuff, and just, it's just... crazy just to see how rampant everything was, and it's not over. We're gonna hear more and more stuff come out about people, and like Ubisoft in particular had a bunch of stuff come out about them. We won't go into details just because like Ubisoft's running their own investigation on it, but Ubisoft has a gaming event in like 2 weeks, and
they're gonna have to speak publicly on it.
Exactly. They're going to have to, they already said that they're like doing an internal investigation and stuff like that, but this is going to put a shadow over their event, and they need to address it either before the event or during the event. But like they need to figure out what they need to do. And it's just the whole industry now needs to self-evaluate. And people need to realize too that like, HR for companies, because a lot of these stories they talk about, they went to like HR for their company. HR sadly isn't for the employee. It's for the corporation. It's there. The HR is there to protect the corporation, not the employees. So that structure needs to be like reevaluated as well. So hopefully if any good comes from this, it's like we reevaluate how things work and put safety measures in place to prevent something like this happening in the future. It's just a shame, you know, like it sounds dumb to be upset that Evo, the fighting game tournament that I was looking forward to is canceled, but it's at least something you can look to that people were looking forward to, and they should direct their anger at the abusers in terms of their, or like the abusive like culture that has been made for predators to like thrive in. As and opposed to being upset that Evo 2020 was canceled, they should be upset that it was canceled because people were horrible.
Yeah, and some of these content creators watch their career go up in flames overnight.
Yeah, yeah. Which I still am baffled by. Like, you hear like what some content creators were doing, and their career is over. And if they've been doing content creation for more than a couple years, when they look for another job, like, I don't think they realize that, like, their moment in the spotlight is very precious. And if you ruin that,
yeah,
it's really hard for them to get back into the real world.
Well, the only the only saving grace might be if they did kind of go by a persona for the most part online. Like, I mean, a lot of people know who their real names are, and they might recognize them or not, but at least if you Google their actual name, it may or may not come up as heavy as if you Google their Twitch profile.
Yeah, but luckily, like, you can't even hide behind a username anymore, so those people that have done horrible things, their real name's found out. And they're gonna have a hard time getting back into industry. Though this isn't the first time there's been a wave of like these sort of things. I've seen stuff like this happen a couple years ago, and people that accused and admitted to doing horrible things have found spots in, YouTube or something. you know, mm-hmm. a new audience that like stuck with them. So people aren't going to go away, but at least hopefully their reach can be diminished.
Right.
Yeah. But let's just switch gears a little bit to some happier news. Really hard to transition out of that. So yeah.
Don't be a dick. Treat people how you want to be treated. Let's talk about video games.
Yeah. Okay. So Xbox announced that their Game Fest is happening. Their big like press conference, whatever you want to call them. I still don't really know what to call them. They are going to do basically like a week worth of content. So starting July 21st, they're going to release 60 demos on the Xbox store. And by the end of the week, that week, it should be anywhere between 75 and 100 total demos. Now, these demos will disappear after the week is over. And they emphasize that these demos aren't your typical demos. These aren't like finished product demos. These are quote unquote like show floor demos.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is stuff. These are vertical slices that we would have gotten to play at a Microsoft booth or at another booth for during E3. Like, hey, I got to play a half a level of Contra 44. I don't even. That's the first thing that popped in my head.
Yeah. So this is really cool. Are going to be like, unpolished.
Yeah, this is really cool if this is going to be on the Xbox Store and on the Game Pass on PC. Not Game Pass, but on the Xbox launcher on PC. I think this is something we were talking about a month or two ago of a great opportunity for a handful of games that, you know, may or may not have just shown up on, you know, storefronts in September, October, November, and you wouldn't have known anything about them because of COVID. But now it might be one of those things where either A, you actually get your time to physically play this game and to figure out if you're having fun with it or liking it, or B, it allows content creators an opportunity to create content around it, to which in August or September, again, when you hear this game coming out and you look for it, you'll actually be able to see somebody playing it that maybe it's somebody that you understand or you like or you follow or you respect their opinion, versus nobody knows anything about this game because it fell in the wasteland of not having any summer coverage.
Yeah, the only thing that worries me about this is the messaging that they're going to have to tell people, especially with today's gaming culture, of these aren't going to be perfect demos. Like, some of these might be rough. A lot of the times at E3s, me and Dave would be handed a controller and they would say, like, hey, the game might break on you, you know, and then we would have to take them at their word that they will fix some of the bugs that we've seen. And
which for the most part they do.
Yeah, which they do. But we would know going into a demo, like, hey, you might run into some issues, or this part of the game isn't complete, but we're going to add to that later on. So I'm wondering the level of polish that are going to be on these demos, and if there's going to be any clear messaging in terms of, hey, this is alpha, this is beta footage.
Yeah, I think there will be at the beginning. I think you're going to have to like press and hold a button, or, you know, say that you acknowledge that you read something, work in progress, not final builds, stuff like that.
Yeah, and then I worry about, will people actually bother to read that and understand that, or will some games just immediately be thrown away?
I think that would happen regardless, no matter what they did. So,
yeah. So that's this part one of it, all those demos coming. They listed some of the games that are going to be there, but there's nothing like major that was listed, but they only like mentioned like five or six games. But the press conference is happening July 23rd, so 2 days after like the demo day starts. And they mentioned that, you know, like Halo will be there. This will be like the big reveal for Halo. No more teaser trailers, at least I hope. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man, I'll be so pissed if...
Do you think there'll be a demo for Halo? Trailers.
I think so.
Okay.
I feel like they have to put out a big demo for this to even be worth it. Even if that means that big demo will basically
suck. You have to play five demos to play Halo.
My only like concern with that is just like Halo releases demo and it sucks all the air out of the room. So all the other demos that are on there, especially because they're going to disappear at the end of the week.
Right.
That people just aren't going to have the time to like really experiment with this, especially knowing download sizes and people's internet connections. You might if there's a Halo demo, it might be huge enough that you might spend a little bit of time downloading it and just not have a chance to play anything else once you actually dive into it. I would hope a lot of their first party stuffs like would have demos. Like maybe Hellblade can have some sort of demo, because I think that's still kind of like launch window.
Is this kind of? I hope these are on PC as well.
I hope so too. But everything that I've seen just mentions the Xbox dashboard. But technically, that Xbox dashboard is on PC as well. So I don't know. I'm hoping
either that, or I'm gonna have to find a friend that has an Xbox and take it from him for a week.
Right, because I really want to get an Xbox, but because Game Pass and all their games on PC, I just haven't had a reason to do it. So we'll see what happens during this press conference. It was originally supposed to just be first party games, but since the Sony event, there's been some mixed messaging on there will also be third party stuff potentially there, and I think that's just because they had to respond to the event Sony put on, because Sony put on a really good PS5 third party and first party.
Yeah, at this point in time, I don't know what third party is left.
I don't know either. Yeah. Especially with Ubisoft, being around the corner.
And Bethesda having their own. You might have a couple more deals where obviously Xbox has a deal with Assassin's Creed, but what are you going to keep showing more of the, there's going to become a point where there's too much of that game shown.
Yeah, and then, apparently Warner Brothers is going to show Harry Potter and the new Batman game at their own event, DC Fandom. So I don't know, maybe Microsoft can hop in there and try and secure those reveals for their press conference. Mm-hmm. I don't know everything that they can have, just because we know Grounded, the Obsidian game, should be out by then. So there's a first party that won't be there. Mm-hmm. We already know Hellblade. We already know Halo. I'm just want to know what else they have. We'll get the new Fable game.
Fable or Waste. I'm trying to think of the stuff that they were showing at the previous press conference. There might be some more Minecraft stuff and some. What was it called? Wastelands. I'd have to go through showed last year at their press conference, to see where the status of some of these games are. But they did have a certain point where they were showing five or six B-rolls of games that I don't think have come out yet. So,
no, especially their indie, initiative
ID
stuff
at Xbox or something or whatever it was.
Yeah, but I'm excited for it. Especially, my gaming PC still works, so I want to play some Microsoft Studio games. I hope they can get out of the rut that they're currently in, because the last Gears and Halo they did well for Gears or Halo, but they just, from what I'm told from people that played them, they didn't hit like they usually hit.
Yeah, didn't have a resounding reverb after you're playing them.
So. Yeah. And then I think they're on Forza Horizon. I think that might be the next Forza game. So
who knows?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it should be Horizon, but it might be just Forza 7. 7?
Mm-hmm.
6. I don't know what number they're on. But yeah, so get ready for Microsoft in 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks? Jesus. All right.
So our plan, obviously, from a DDG coverage standpoint, is that depending, I think we're about 90% sure that after the Ubisoft event, we will have something within the first day or two posted after that with our thoughts and impressions on that. We'll definitely have something after this Microsoft event. And I have a feeling depending on how these demos work, we might just, that Michael will stream a handful of demos. I'll stream a handful of demos if they're available and streamable, and if they're on PC. I'd love to, show off some stuff. Maybe you guys can ask for a couple things to check out what we like, and but definitely a couple. I foresee at least two bonus episodes in the month of July for Microsoft and for Ubisoft right now.
Yeah, for sure. Especially we did the PlayStation one, we'll do the Ubisoft one. I wish Nintendo would do more than their small directs, because I would totally love to do a Nintendo one.
Yeah, they're always game specific. They're always game specific now too. They're just, it's like, oh, this is a Smash direct. I'm like, can you show three or four things that we can talk about, please?
Yeah, that's all I want, because I love being hyper specific on stuff, but when it's a 20 minute presentation, it's really hard to.
I don't like the
whole show with it.
I think the state of play stuff that they did for Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima was great. I don't think it should have been called State of Play. you know.
No, they should just have a spinoff name for that sort
of
thing.
Yeah, and just like the Nintendo Directs that are Smash specific or Donkey Kong specific or whatever the next big game they're bringing out are is going to be, like, I just don't think they should be called Nintendo Directs either.
Yeah. Okay, but speaking to about Microsoft, they have thrown their hat apparently in the ring to purchase WB Games. So, a little background on this. About a month ago, it was reported that AT&T, the owner of Warner Media and therefore Warner Brothers Games, they were apparently interested in selling their gaming division just because when they purchased Warner, they bought it in whole, but they had no interest in continuing the video game department. There was reports that they were kind of interested in what Disney was doing, where they were just licensing out their properties as opposed to creating the properties. Because that's just, it's kind of free money at that point, just licensing out, because it's like, okay, we don't have to worry about headcounts, we don't have to worry about development costs. We just license it out, and that's someone else's problems. And we profit if it's successful, and we profit if it isn't. So they were potentially looking to sell Warner Brothers. And also, when they purchased Warner, they took on Warner's $154 billion debt, which those numbers are just insane to me that could be like a real number that they're looking to, that they bought in debt.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're going to pay money to absorb your lack of money.
Yeah. And they apparently were looking to sell the video game division without the licenses, just the studio, just the talent, for about $4 billion. And they own like probably a dozen studios, NetherRealm, Rocksteady, and then like TT Games that makes all the Legos, and then like five or six other studios that just have like the Warner Brothers name, like Warner Brothers Montreal, Warner Brothers proper. So they're looking to sell that for around $4 billion to help offload like their huge debt that they have under the Warner name.
Which is crazy that it's that much without the IPs.
Yes.
Not granted, nobody bought it yet. So.
Yeah, so but that's what they're looking for. That not necessarily means they'll get that, but that means whoever buys them for $4 billion would then also have to negotiate license for Harry Potter, for DC, and all the other licenses that come with that if they want to make a game in that.
I ain't paying $4 billion without IPs.
Right?
At least some. Like, there's a chance that, yeah, I get it. Like, their Batman name or their licensing that they have for DC or whatever their licensing that's around a lot of stuff. Like, there it's got a value to it. But that value is not any good if you don't have people to make the game for it.
Yeah, because the only attachment to an IP, because, you know, if you buy Warner Brothers now, you're buying Rocksteady and you're buying whoever's making a Harry Potter game. So, therefore, you're at least getting the license for those games, you would assume. They wouldn't throw any of that out. So when this news first reported, first came out, there's three companies that were interested in purchasing Warner Brothers Games division. And it was Activision, EA, and Take-Two. A report that came out today from The Information, which a lot of people sourced. Microsoft is apparently also interested in purchasing Warner Brothers, which would be huge if Microsoft would do this, because that would turn a ton of studios into first-party Microsoft studios.
Hell, maybe Pat Mahomes should buy them.
So here's the thing with that. Like, I feel like if Microsoft, I just don't know if Microsoft is willing to throw that much money into the Xbox division after they just acquired the amount of studios they just required.
I don't think they are either, because there's not a software attachment to this either. Like, there's not from, it's literally just buying into a gaming division. Like, they're not getting any tech or any tech
just
talent
talents
with it, or they're not getting any software like acquisition with it. So, like, everybody, you know, Microsoft is a huge conglomerate company, but they're huge because of their software, not their hardware.
Yeah, like from this, they would get the talent in the studios, but none of the IPs would be attached, or they would have to throw additional money to get the IPs, which then would just probably cause a bidding war once every studio finds out that they don't have to spend $4 billion to get the Batman IP. They could just pay significantly less.
I feel like this is like Warner Brothers, who's ever responsible for selling this company, or trying to sell the company, trying to build demand. Like, you always hear about this, like, again, to bring it a little back to sports for me, but, you know, there's a huge player on the market. You always hear rumblings, oh man, like, maybe this other team's interested in it, and the hope is that it freaks out somebody else to add another player into the trade market or something. And I think that if, you know, EA and Activision and Take-Two are negotiating to purchase Warner Gaming or even the IPs, and then they hear, like, oh, like, Microsoft might be, like, you know, ready to open the bank, like, whatever Take-Two's limit is, like, maybe they get to it sooner than they wanted to do. Like, they get to their top offer sooner. I don't see it. Like, there's not a... Making any of these studios become Xbox studios, there's not a huge financial return on investment for this, I don't feel like, for Microsoft.
Especially right before they're about to launch a console, which is a big unknown.
Yeah.
Like, Microsoft has the money to do this. I just don't know if they want to spend the money right now, just because there's... I mean, they just closed down Mixer, you know, and they're trying to launch xCloud, which I guess... the acquisition of Warner Brothers.
Not without, like, the IPs, gaming division.
Yeah, not without the IPs.
Yeah.
Except the fact, unless they can, like, get the IPs and then the next set of games that are already considered or already being developed for multi-platforms, they just stop the development on the other platforms.
Which I don't think they can.
Yeah, depending on whatever deals were already signed.
Because we've already seen them buy companies like Mojang, and they still continue to release multi-platform.
I think, and then Obsidian.
Isn't Psychonauts still coming to PS, to PlayStation?
Yeah, it is, because it was Kickstartered. So then, like, they were, like, obligated. Or it was Fig. I forget what.
Yeah, it was something. So there's so much fine print in there of, you know, of what you can or cannot do. That's a lot. Like you said, that's a lot of studios to purchase without. As tentatively right now, without getting the IPs, like, why, you know, at this point in time, like, okay, you get the talent of Rocksteady, but there's the possibility that they can't build on their Batman franchise because they don't own it anymore, because you don't own it. Like, that's weird.
The studios they own are Avalanche, NetherRealm, Monolith, Rocksteady, TT Games, and five other Warner Brothers studios. Realistically, no offense to the other studios, there's probably only like people that you, if you're a Microsoft, you would actually want. So what I would assume what would happen if Warner Brothers is serious about being sold, or AT&T is serious about selling them, is they would just break the studios apart instead of selling by whole to get the most money, which probably means some studios would end up closing just because.
But when you sell the studios individually, you sell the IPs that the studios made.
Yes, because, like, realistically, TT Games without Lego... would anyone really want that?
I don't remember what they did before.
Yeah, like, I feel like AT&T could get more money just breaking the studios apart. Microsoft buying Rocksteady makes a lot more sense than Microsoft buying the 10 studios that come with Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris Penwell asked, I'll just grab his question now, do you have a preference for a publisher to buy them between Microsoft, EA, Activision, and Take-Two?
From that list?
Yes.
Activision.
Okay, yeah, no, I actually agree with you, which is crazy.
I mean, that's like, I mean, from the, do I want EA touching them? No. Do I want 2K touching them? Not really. Like, yeah. And then there was one more.
Microsoft.
Yeah, and then I don't really want them to go exclusive. So, I just don't want them to. So in terms of, you know, what they, you know, they could or couldn't be doing, like, Activision, I think, you know, could make really, really good use of them in terms of being able to supplement their auxiliary studios to help them, you know, create some additional stuff like they have done with, whether you like it or not, or happy with what Activision has or hasn't done over the last couple of years. Activision's been in pretty good shape between Sekiro and how the Call of Duty franchise is handled, and their Warzone stuff has been handled pretty well.
Crash Spyro.
Yeah, so, like, they've been doing pretty well, and whether you agree or don't agree, they did a pretty damn good job with Destiny. So, are they going to microtransaction certain things? We'll have to find out, you know, but... they wouldn't do any more or less microtransactions than EA or 2K would do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think Activision would probably be the safest bet, just because I can't trust EA, like, at all. I can't trust EA with handling anything, really. And Microsoft would just cause exclusivity, and I'm not a fan of exclusivity. Even if they would be coming to PC and I'll be able to play them regardless, I like when everyone can play everything. And then, I just don't, like, Take-Two, I know they exist and they print money with Grand Theft Auto, but I just don't have that much of a trust with them. And
as many games you can list, like, look at what they've done with Grand Theft Auto, like, fantastic. Look at what they did to Borderlands, like, yes. Not so great. Like, look at what they've, you know, look at Godfall, it's like looking kind of right now. Yeah. Like, you know, there's as many good, yeah. Like,
that franchise has been fumbled.
The other game that they tried to release as like a Overwatch style game, I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was like supposed to be like this looter. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, that's so. It's funny. Every bad thing has been a Gearbox bad thing. So maybe it's just like Gearbox, who like they have a deep partnership with, is just hasn't been working out for them. I think Activision would probably be the safest bet with them, and at least Activision.
Well, we'll talk about 2K's interesting practices next.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just jump to that. NBA 2K21 is listed at $69 for the PS5 and Xbox Series X. This is the first publisher to list prices for the next-gen games, and it looks like they might be $10 more expensive. They're going to be $10 more than the current price that they are listed as for this generation.
So when I first saw this headline, my initial thought was next-gen $60, current-gen $50. That was my first thought, without reading the article.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that it's $70, $60.
Yeah.
And
then the Mamba Edition, which is the $100 one, that's the only way to get the free upgrade to the next gen. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I am. Somebody on our Discord may be aware of it.
So. Yeah. I don't know what 2K is doing. Doesn't sound great. But how do you feel about the idea that next gen games could cost $70?
I think many people are going to be surprised by my answer, but I am 100% okay with it.
Same. Okay, cool. We're on the same page on this one. I'm also fine with it, with a caveat. If it means microtransactions will be lessened, which I don't think is going to happen.
I don't care if microtransactions are lessened or not. Microtransactions are part of the game. I don't know if I've said this on DDG before, but I want a developer to come out and say, my game cost $120, and this is what I'm bringing for you over the next 12 months. Like, I want them to be forward with it. Like, I don't, you know, like, I want one developer to do this one day. I want whatever it is, Ubisoft to come out with Assassin's Creed Valhalla and say, you know what? It's $110, and here's what I'm going to do at the 3-month mark, the 6-month mark, the 9-month mark, and the 12-month mark. And you're paying for all of it up front right away. And like even somebody in chat, like, you know, price is way too high. Like, gaming prices have not gone up in 20 years.
20 years. Yeah. Like, and if you include inflation, it's crazy.
Yeah. So since the games have been $60 since I was still in high school. And, you know, and the fact that they're in the year 2000, NBA 2K01 was $60. And now in 2020, you're telling me it's only going to be $70? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, microtransactions aside, like the fact that Call of Duty still continues to cost $60. Like, okay. So many of you know that I sold shoes for a very long time. There's two huge examples that I can use for this is Air Force Ones, which I think most of you know what Air Force Ones are, and New Era baseball hats. Okay. So if I wanted in high school, if I wanted to buy a Detroit Tigers on-field New Era baseball hat, it was $23. That hat is $42 today.
Yeah.
Air Force Ones, all white Air Force Ones, when I was worked at Champ Sports and I sold them in high school, the low tops cost $69. And now I have not seen them for less than $90. and people are still buying them and paying the price for them. You don't see people not wearing New Era hats. You don't see people not wearing Yankees hats, White Sox hats, Red Sox, Cubs, whatever. They're still buying these hats. They're continuing to do it. And the fact of the matter that the gaming industry, it felt that they could not go over the $60 mark, and that somebody is going over the $60 mark, major kudos to them. Like, good job.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, especially, like, I don't know if you remember, but, like, N64 games, I know it's a different medium in terms of, like, they were cartridge-based, but N64 games range from $40 to, like, $80, depending on which game it was, based on how much memory they needed. So this isn't the first time we're paying, like, $70 for a game. But it's
one especially of those... when a games have been coming out on two discs, like the cost that they're having to do to put these to press these games, they're losing money, and they're just hoping that like look at the industry, like when you go back to like Tomb Raider, when Square, I don't even know who's, I'm losing their name, the company that was publishing the game came out after it sold a million copies or however many it did, like it was deemed a number of success. They said it was a financial loss. It's a financial loss because they weren't making any money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things about it. It's just like everyone wants the quality in games to continue to get, higher. You know, we want 4K resolution. We want photorealistic graphics, or people want photorealistic graphics. And the only way to achieve that is to put more people on the game, which then means they need to get paid a fair salary. And the cost to produce these games is a ton of money. So the idea that let's go with Naughty Dog. The fact that
I was just about to ask you, is Last of Us 2 technically running better than Last of Us 1?
No, or even more, since it hasn't changed in 20 years, is Crash Bandicoot 1 and The Last of Us 2 Part 2 being both like $60 games make any sense to anybody?
Right.
No. It might mean we were being ripped the fuck off 20 years ago, if you look at it that way, but I like
or is Mario 64 compared to Mario
Odyssey
is Odyssey a better game than Mario 64?
Yeah. It's
okay. They cost the same amount of money.
Yeah, exactly. And So I'm okay, and $10 is like, I'm happy it's that little. Yeah. Like
the thing that I'm not okay with is now no definition of smart delivery, no clarification on that. Also, what I find fascinating is that I think that this game is going to get delayed. Like this, like the 2K is not going to come out September 4th. I think the NBA is going to push that back. I think 2K wants to push it back because one of the things is with the extension of this, the possibility of the season happening in July at the end of this month, at the end of July, and then it not being done until like almost the end of September, they're going to have a gap between the start of the next season. The like technically, if NBA 2K comes out on September 4th, which I think is tentatively scheduled to, the draft will not have happened yet.
Yeah.
So they won't even in terms know where to of put like updating rosters and stuff, and in sports games aside, like even Madden, like the things that Madden, MLB, 2K, what these studios are doing to this game, that they're they're making money from their Ultimate Teams or their My Teams or like all that those microtransactions, but the expectations of especially with Madden, where people are like waiting for the roster update to happen like on Tuesday or Wednesday, like after like Sunday and Monday's game, like I don't even know what day it happens, like Thursday. MLB does the same thing where they're like, if you're playing online franchises or you're playing exhibition mode, like in a player is having a really good season, like if it's a normal season in June and July, they're trending really well, the developer updates that game and makes that player better, or like changes something for that player till it seems more realistic. That is part of your $60. Yes. They didn't do that in 2000. Like that's you're not paying $3 to get a roster update, which you probably should be paying.
Yeah. And when we're moving more into games as a service, like Call of Duty, all the map packs are free, and what subsidizes that is like microtransactions. So microtransactions aren't going to go away anytime soon, though they might be getting ready for them to possibly go away in the future, just because more and more countries and more governments are starting to analyze like the loot box thing. So loot boxes might go away, not anytime soon, but in a couple years they could be like outlawed, or they have to like change course. And companies see that and just want to get the price increase out of the way. So you start this gen at 70. So halfway through the gen, these companies don't have to say like, oh, microtransactions can't happen. So here's a price increase on all future games. So like, I'm not surprised by a $10 increase, or am I upset by it?
I think that people are a little agitated that it's 2K making this step first. It'd be better, you know, it would not be better if EA made the step first. Like, I think, you know, if Microsoft came out and said, or Sony came out and said, like, hey, you know, I don't even know, the Ratchet and Clank is going to be $70. I think that it might be a little bit more like a softener blow, but it, you know, like immediately people are like, oh, so you're charging me $10 more, so your virtual currency is going to be free. No.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this is too high. We should, at this point in time, we should be paying $80 to $90 for a game anyways.
People in Canada do.
Yeah. And, one of our, Patreon supporters, and he's in the Discord, like he says that these games are going to cost $100.
Yeah,
in Canada now, and that's crazy. Like that, and that's interesting to me, and it's a little crazy to me. But it has a little bit more to do with the economic value of the Canadian dollar at this current time, along with some other factors. But the rate of inflation of what we should be paying and what you are paying, it's like that's like expecting gas to still be like 77 cents.
Yeah.
Like, if you think games are priced too high, then you're just disconnected with the value of dollars in the world right now.
Yeah, it sucks. No one wants to be paying more, but it's just it's how things are have to be. I think you are right. It is because it's NBA 2K making that announcement. It comes off way worse as opposed to if Microsoft or Sony during like,
hey, Halo's gonna be $70.
Yeah,
Cyberpunk's gonna be $70. Are you gonna be mad if Cyberpunk 2077 is $70?
Yeah. And also, hey, maybe that's more reason for you to just use the backwards compatibility of the Xbox Series X and the PS5 and then just buy the last gen version of the game that's already going to look pretty damn good. So,
are you going to be mad because Gran Turismo 7 is going to cost $70? Like, come on.
Nah, you're going to buy it because it's going to be better looking and it's going to have new features. Will you be completely happy?
My biggest problem. Yeah. Okay. Right there. My biggest problem is that the consumer has never realized how much power they truly have. Like if they stopped purchasing something, the price would change. And yes. I don't think that when PS5 comes out or Series X comes out, you're going to see NBA 2K for the month of December or January hit the charts. It's going to be top five NPD. Like it's going to be. Are you going to be mad that GTA 6 costs $70? No, you're not.
Yeah. And just like, you know, we've seen with consoles, when they don't sell, they drop the price on consoles. If the consumer is against the $70 price tag, then if they all decide not to buy games on the next-gen consoles, then the price will drop down and they have to. And then we'll probably see some more aggressiveness with microtransactions. Or season passes might make a comeback. You need to vote for your wallet. If you are truly unhappy with like the $10 price increase, then you can't support that system and those games. Like you can't have it both ways. You can't buy it and then be upset that you're buying it for $10 more because the publishers only see you as a dollar amount. So if they get your $70, they think you're happy and they honestly don't care if you aren't. So
at the core, I think it's terrible that if 2K comes out September 4th and their expectation for the player is buy it on September 4th, play it on current gen consoles, buy your next gen console if you do. And if you do buy your next gen console, here's a $70 game that you need to buy again. That's not good. That's shitty.
Yeah. Where they're like, oh, you should have bought the Mamba edition. It's just like.
But if I don't feel like there's enough $40 value or $30 value in the Mamba edition for me, then you need to offer some type of alternative.
Yeah. But I guess their alternative can be like, well, the system is backwards compatible. So just throw your old game in there and you just don't get any.
Yeah, I didn't dig into it enough, though. Like, what is initially, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, like when I thought it was going to cost $60 on next gen and $50 on current gen, is that usually it's like kind of like the they started calling them years ago, like Legacy Edition. Like I think FIFA still releases on PS3, or it did until like 2 or 3 years ago. But mm-hmm. it was just like a Legacy Edition of where it was essentially the game ran the same, and they were doing that yearly roster update. Yeah. They would do a couple quality of life tweaks and stuff in there just to make sure that the game was functioning well. But I'm curious to what they're offering on next gen that won't be on prior gen.
I think this first year, they're the same game except 4K 60 frames.
Yeah, because they're purposely like the part of what kicked this whole story off is they're purposely having two separate cover athletes. Like they're making it very clear that these are different games. Damian Lillard is on the current gen version, and Zion Williamson it will be on the next gen version. So like at the store, you're going to see two different versions of this game along with the Mamba Edition, which will come immediately out to current gen, and then also with the upgrade to next gen for Kobe Bryant. But they're making it very clear that these are two different versions of the games with two different cover athletes. So I think that's good, but I want to know what's, you know, like if I'm going to wait until November or whenever these consoles come out, what am I getting on the next gen other than frames and shininess? Like what, you know, if there's a feature, and if there's not, that's even more of a reason for them to offer some kind of smart delivery, because it's going to hurt their sales. Mm-hmm. If, you know, it's really going to hurt their sales if it comes out in September. I fully expect now that that 2K pulled the Band-Aid off, I fully expect Madden to be a $70 game.
Yeah, I have a feeling and
FIFA. So.
Yeah, I have a feeling everything's going to be $70, but someone needed to be the first one to pull the trigger, and they were. So we are now waiting to see what happens for the rest of the things, for the rest of the publishers. But that is it for the news. There's a couple more random things, but those were like the biggest stories that I thought were worth talking about.
All right. So we're going to do playing and watching. I did not play a whole lot of stuff. Work's kind of ramped up a little bit. I've been doing some stuff at home, the holidays, the July 4th weekend, and then just kind of coming down from Last of Us. Like I put a lot of time into Last of Us. Obviously like 30 hours over like a 7 or 8 day period. So that was, you know, a lot of gaming for me. So I ended up just kind of like taking a break, hanging out with the family a little bit. So my wife had not, I think I saw this on a plane, but my wife had not seen Crazy Rich Asians.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched that, and that was just as funny that, you know, at its funny moments. And there's a couple moments where she was crying, and I'm like, are you crying? Like, it was just like, you know, but she enjoyed the movie. It was fun to just watch that. And then we watched that on HBO Max, which, by the way, is like going away from Roku and Amazon Prime at the end of this month, which is really weird. Or Amazon Fire Stick.
Yeah,
and
they,
I thought it was
going to
get replaced with. Yeah, so like I'm a little agitated with that. I get HBO Max for free because I have AT&T cell service.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I have any stick devices in my house that I can watch it on now after this month.
Chromecast is the only thing.
Yeah, and speaking of which, I've been looking, that Stadia cost $100 now with the Chromecast Ultra and the controller.
Yeah, I was looking
so
at that
I'm
too.
Like, I was like, you know, like,
will they
the Chromecast,
be there?
Yeah, the Chromecast is interesting. So I'm kind of on the fence on that. It would probably end up kind of just being like a mini Destiny machine for me sometimes, for the most part. But there's some other stuff on there that I probably love to check out. And I'm just confused about the premium subscription. Is it still a subscription? Does it come with it? Do I get it for a certain amount of months? Like, I'm having a hard time understanding that at the moment. And I've been trying to read about it, and that didn't really help. We also, on Amazon Prime, watched, I believe it's called My Spy with
Dave Bautista, as he's known on Twitter.
He's a wrestler, right?
He's a wrestler. Yes.
Okay, yeah, that was pretty funny. I enjoyed that movie. We heard some good things about it.
That's in my queue. You know, apparently, it was in like it was just shelved for like several years. Like the movie's like actually old, but they just
I think he like produced it.
Yeah, and it just
or executive produced it or something.
Yeah, I think he was one of the people that finally got it released, and then like Amazon picked it up.
Yeah,
apparently,
so,
that movie's
I mean,
a couple
it's
years
good.
Old.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny. It has some pretty cool, you know, it's got an interesting kind of like a little bit of a cheesy storyline to it, you know, typical predictable storyline to it. But it's got some fun moments and some interesting things. I didn't feel like I wasted my time watching that. But I'm having a really hard time. Like, and I think you tweeted something about this, and I didn't respond to it. But like, I need sports to come back as background noise.
Yeah.
Like, I so badly want to just put a baseball game on or watch SportsCenter or watch Baseball Tonight or watch something just to kind of have something on in the house. Because, like, what, trying to watch ESPN now, like, I sit down or lay down at, like, 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock at night, you know, wanting to turn SportsCenter on. And it's almost unwatchable at this point in time with the amount of stuff that they're covering. And I'm just like, this is, like, where, like, I get it. Like, all this stuff is going on. Like, and selfishly, like, I want baseball. Like, in my heart, I want baseball. In my head, I look at it and go, well, that's not a good idea. Like,
nope.
It's like, and it's me. It's 100% me. But it's also starting to just affect my TV watching in general because, like, any of my regular shows, like, aren't updating. Like, it's getting so bad now where, like, yeah, there's plenty of stuff that I could delve into, but I just don't want to invest into a different show at this point in time. I know that I'm 100% being selfish. Like, I just want I want to watch a new SWAT episode, you know, as much as it's cringy for Michael because I watch this. I want to watch a new NCIS. Like, I like these shows that my wife and I watch together. Like, it's bad that I'm like, do we like, you're just like, and I still
start
go
Buffy
and I click
the Vampire Slayer. Goddammit.
Shut your mouth.
You would start, like it, you know, Angela. You'll like Buffy.
I've watched some of it.
Some of it. Oh, out of context episodes. No, you start all 144 episodes.
Oh my God, there's 144 episodes.
Yes, and then you have to watch the Angel spinoff.
Like, my son,
episodes.
My oldest son, I think, has gone back and started Avatar The Last Airbender and watching that with Owen more and, like, and going back and watching these shows. Like, it's getting to the point where my wife and I were talking the other day. She's like, maybe we start Burn Notice back at the beginning again because we really like Burn Notice as a USA show. And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. Like, I do, but I don't. Like, I just, like, I so badly want current shows or something brand new to grab me. And I know that I can go watch, like, Breaking Bad, but, like, again, those are ones, like, I'm even having a hard time, like, attaching myself to Supergirl. My wife doesn't watch it, so I have to watch it when like, I have free time, which doesn't happen because they're always home.
So your only free time you spend with me recording, and last week we took the week off, but still recorded 4 hours worth of podcast.
Yeah. So, I'm being selfish, but it's kind of messing with my routine. And my store started staying open a little bit later. So, like, I work like a 10 to 8:30 shift, so I don't really have a morning. I don't really have an evening. You know, and all this stuff is really messing with me. And I would love to come home, have something to eat, and have any kind of baseball game on or any kind of basketball game on at this point in time. And the stuff like on Netflix and on Amazon Prime, like, there's series there to watch. Like, I should go, you know, I should go back and maybe try to watch the Boys again. Like, I didn't really get into that. I've heard really good things about that. I've never seen Breaking Bad. I've never seen Walking Dead. Like, those are all things that I could go back and maybe watch. But there are also things that I would only watch because so many people recommend them as much watches. But there's certain things that I've watched and they just don't grab me. So I know I have a little bit of a – I blame my parents for some of this stuff of what I watch. It's part of the reason why I listen to a lot of sports talk radio, because my parents used to listen to a lot of talk radio in the car, and I couldn't stand the talk radio that they listened to. So it evolved into my love of sports and then my love of sports radio, and it's also why I love podcasting, I think.
Just play MLB The Show and subscribe to a bunch of crime podcasts.
That requires me to work with my hands. Like, I just want to lay down and watch something. You know, so that, and that's where we're at, like, with I dabbled a little bit in Destiny. I'm curious to see what they're gonna do with some other stuff, and that's just kind of like my go-to. But I realized too, like, playing Last of Us, like, I played it upstairs the entire time on my son's PS4, like, on the couch with my wife. I didn't play a video game in my office for like 10 days 12 days, and that's a long time for me. That's kind of where I'm at with playing and watching. I do have a game. I'm off the next couple of days. By the time you hear this, it won't matter. But there's a couple games that we have that I can stream and check out some stuff. And then also, like, Destiny's running like a really cool promotion. It's selfishly kind of cool. Like, you gift two, if you use the Destiny or the Bungie extension and you gift two subs to a streamer playing Destiny, you get an emblem and a shader, like a Twitch emblem and a Twitch shader. So it's like that Twitch purple, and the emblem's kind of cool. So I might stream Destiny a couple times this week just to see if people want that emblem and shader, and selfishly DDG gets to benefit from it as well. But that's kind of where we're at with those things. I definitely like playing Last of Us. It's given me a drive to to want to play a little bit more single player stuff. So I'm probably going to pick up Horizon again or start Spider-Man in the next week or two.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. That's where I'm at. So you got a couple things you need to review, right?
Yes.
Since you have all this time on your hands, you Mr. Furloughed Hermit.
Yep. So. Thank God, man. Because I've been on a Reddit thread for my work, and it's a lot of people having emotional breakdowns. So
I think we need to set times where you're not allowed to look at the internet.
I sleep. So that counts.
No. Like purposeful times. Like I'm gonna put some parental controls on the internet from you from like 10 a.m. to like 6 p.m. or something.
I need that darkness to remind me to stay inside. I need to look at case counts in Florida. Even though I have no plans to go to Florida, I still need to learn. I still need to see it. Okay. So I've been focusing on actually a couple games for review, but I'm only going to review two because some of them are barely in. Like, me and Dave have a code for CrossCode.
Yeah, but I heard that game's like 60 hours.
Yeah, it's like 40 to 80 hours, so it's going to be a little bit. Yeah. I think I got it on Friday. I got the code.
Yeah.
So
I think that'll be more of a conversation impressions that we're going to have together in the next week or two. So.
Yeah, unless we email the PR company. I was like, hey, we're going to review this in like 2 months. okay, so I'm in the middle of a bunch of different games, but let's break into my reviews. The first game is SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated. I got a review code for this for the PS4. The game originally released on a PS2, Xbox, GameCube in 2003, and this is a full remaster of the game. Visually, they did a lot of work to make this look like it belongs on modern consoles. It doesn't look like a game that's 17 years old. It's, you know, SpongeBob, the cartoon characters in 3D, in a 3D platformer. So visually it looks modern, but gameplay wise, it does feel aged, which is something you just kind of expect, you know how 3D platformers played 20 years ago. So mm-hmm. It's a straight up 3D platformer. The main objective is just like collecting. There's like golden spatulas to collect. There are shiny items to collect, and you just get a playground basically of like iconic places from the TV show, and you collect the items. You'll meet characters from the show, and they will give you like a secondary set of items for you to collect, and you just solve the environmental puzzles and do the 3D platforming to do that. You do get to play as SpongeBob, Patrick, and Sandy. Each of them have their own unique abilities, and their abilities are actually really fun, and they do play completely different. And certain puzzles will require certain characters, and there's a ton of different puzzles and different things for them to all collect that require you to switch between the characters. It does have an old holdover from games 20 years ago where you can't change between characters on the fly. You need to go to designated bus stops to swap out the character, but you can't pick which
Boring.
Character you want. No, it's true though. It was definitely one of those frustrations, and I'm just like, man, I wish they upgraded this game to be more modern. It's almost too faithful to a fault because the visuals are updated. It sounds good. But it still has older 3D platforming.
They didn't make the gameplay any better.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, the gameplay was repetitive back then, so it's going to be repetitive now. So I can't really fault them for the repetitiveness because they can't change too much. But some of the platforming is just a little too finicky. There's some weird camera stuff. There's glitches that like I've run into. I oftentimes would get frustrated with the platforming, the jumps didn't go exactly like I expected because the jumps didn't work right, or the environment.
You've gotten used to like a platformer behaving a certain way over the last 20 years, and it doesn't behave that way in this game.
Basically, yeah. And yeah. I would run into those instances where I would get kind of frustrated at this little kid game because it was, it's a SpongeBob game, and it's really hard in 2020. To fully accept this. We've seen remasters where the development team sees the flaws in their old design, or not necessarily their old design, or the original design, and fix certain issues, and they didn't go that extra mile with this. They stayed super faithful to it. It's just that doesn't hold up. Like, it's almost like the nostalgia wears out after the first hour or two. You know, you see the cutscenes, you run around SpongeBob's house, and you're just like, oh my god, like, this is the game from my childhood, and you're kind of excited by that. But then after like an hour, you just are, you know, you die.
Old game is old.
Yes, yeah, Dave's old motto, old game is old. So after just a couple hours that I just found myself just like kind of bored and just going through it just because like I'm reviewing it, and the gameplay just doesn't have like depth that you would want from a modern game, and then just all the old stuff that was frustrating back then is just amplified in current times.
I wish that there was almost like a different word that they use instead of like remaster or remake, because I think that that's giving people a different impression now versus like, okay, we want to sell more copies of this game and we're going to kind of just make it a little better.
Yeah.
Upgrade, like SpongeBob upgrade.
Yeah. Like, I applaud them for picking, like, THQ Nordic for, like, picking SpongeBob Bikini Bottom. Like, that is such a random game to decide to, like, re-release in 2020.
I think the name carries a lot of weight where mom or grandma is going to buy this off a shelf.
Yeah, but you don't really see, like, licensed games get remastered because it's usually kind of a headache. So the fact that they went back and they got it is really cool. Though, this is another thing. So, like, you'll see with a lot of people that are playing this game, the original game didn't have the voice for Mr. Krabs. They got a sound-alike who sounds nothing like Mr. Krabs. The Rehydrate Edition, the new game, could have fixed that. They could have put the effort in to maybe talk to the actor who still voices Mr. Krabs, because SpongeBob is still going on. They could have redid those lines, but they didn't do that. They didn't take that extra step. So, you know, again, it's too faithful to a fault.
Yeah, but I also think this is what we talked about with THQ before, where you're wondering, like, okay, they're acquiring all these IPs, and, like, what are they doing with them? And I don't even know as an example, but if this cost, let's say, $100,000 or, you know, $500,000 to make the game, and you put it on the shelves, and you make $1 million, like, they're cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Like, from a dollars and cents standpoint, like, this, you know, like, SpongeBob still carries a name. The kid's going to be in the store. Mom, I want the SpongeBob game.
Like, yeah, and I'm realistic too. I know if they would have put the real Mr. Krabs voice in it, that probably wouldn't have sold a significant amount of copies. That would have justified the price tag to get the actor, mm-hmm. and then to implement those lines in the game. But we've seen so many remasters that have improved over the original significantly that it's boring. I enjoyed the game at the beginning and it served its nostalgia purposes. I just, unless you have a real, real love for this game, like
you. Or you never played it before.
Even if you never played it before, I don't think you're going to have a great experience. Just because you're going to be like, oh, this old game is old. Like, you need to have a real love for this specific game to, like, really be interested in playing it, because it's still a simple platformer from 2003. It just looks
better you than me, buddy.
Yeah. So that's why, like, my review score for this is 2.5 out of 5. Like, it's not terrible. It's not great. It's just like right down the middle of the type of game it is. Like, it achieves its purpose, but that purpose is still flawed. You know, like, mm-hmm. the at the core, it's still a basic platformer that just hasn't been elevated despite being rehydrated.
License games are hard. Like, they're just super, super hard. Like, you even see it, like, books. Like, we talked about books coming to movies, you know, or movies, you know, becoming games. Like, it's so hard. Like, this Uncharted movie doesn't stand a chance.
Or the Last of Us TV show.
Yeah. I don't think that, then, by the way, the thing you're super excited about, I don't think that Fallout show is going to be very good either.
So here's the thing. I'm not excited for the Fallout show. I'm curious to see what happens with that.
So.
Okay.
All right.
Second game I have to review, and then I'll be done, is West of Dead. So West of Dead is a stylistic Western-themed roguelike starring Ron Perlman. So Ron Perlman's doing, like, the voice work for it. There's been trailers for this game since, like, last year.
By the way, guys, these reviews are super fascinating to me because him and I don't talk about games during the week.
So. No, we don't at all. So you play as Ron Perlman's character. He basically looks like Cowboy Ghost Rider. Like, he's just like a flaming skull. This game is super stylistic. It's like cell shaded with like dark and muted colors, and lighting is very important to it. So your character is William, and you're stuck in like this old West purgatory, and you're just traversing or like navigating these corridors and trying to find answers to like why you're there. Or you're trying to escape. Like, it's very mysterious of, like, what you're doing there and what your purpose is. The game is, like, a twin-stick shooter, almost, because it's got, like, the top-down view of your character, and it has, like, cover that's, like, sticky cover, where if you're close to, like, a barrier, you'll just, like, stick right to it. And you have some slowdown mechanic. Like, if you dodge a bullet shot or a melee attack at the perfect time, the game kind of slows down and your character does like a really stylistic looking move. But because the world is like very stylized, it's a very dark game. The color palette.
Go back. Is there any benefit to dodging? Like, do you get a boost out of it?
No,
or does it just look cool?
It looks cool and you avoid the damage. Sorry, I just saw Dave point like that and it cracked me up. So the world is like very dark and stylized, cell shaded, muted colors. The corridors, the hallways, they're all dark. The rooms that you go into are really dark with just like little bit sources of light everywhere, or like scattered through like a specific room. And you use that light to your advantage. Like, you can't really shoot an enemy in the dark. Like, there's auto lock, but auto lock only works when an enemy's in the light. If there's an enemy in the shadows, you can't auto lock to them. There are different ways you can illuminate the room, and that can help you, like, very like limited like help. So you're constantly trying to balance and almost fight the limited light source. The auto lock thing is a cool mechanic in theory, but it can also be sometimes annoying. There have been times where I have an enemy right in front of me, but because we're kind of in the shadow, my gun is going to auto lock to an enemy that's in the light. So I will miss some shots from time to time because that auto lock decided like, oh, that person in the light is more important than the person standing inches in front of your face. So there's some times where that can be a little frustrating. But at its core, it's a fun shooting game. Like, the shooting feels pretty good outside of that mechanic. And it has a good loot system in place where, because it's a roguelike, every time you die, you have to restart the game from the beginning, which I know Dave hates those.
They're not terrible if they're handled correctly.
Yeah, I think this one's handled correctly.
Handled correctly is very much opinion-based. So.
Yeah, because as you're like going through a level, you'll find, you know, like upgrade options to like increase your health and increase like your damage. Those only last for your current run. But every time you kill an enemy, you earn iron and sin. Sin is just like basically one sin for every kill you get. And then iron is just a random collectible. You use the sin to upgrade your character between runs. So like the upgrades will last from run to run. And then you use the iron to buy better weapons that you can use during that specific run. So they'll go away once you start the game over again. Because it is a roguelike, it's procedurally generated, which I always have mixed feelings about procedural generated levels, because oftentimes they can just kind of come across as generic because it's just spitting out like random level designs and it can't get super creative with it. So I've definitely had
It feels like there's no love or no core to it. They're
exactly.
It doesn't matter because we can just kind of randomize it anyways.
Yeah, and that definitely is a problem with this and most roguelikes, to be fair. The issues that I had with it in terms of like that auto lock thing, and then there's sometimes some annoying stuff with the camera because it is that top down. Sometimes the camera gets stuck on a wall or there's just weird angles. Those problems didn't prevent me from enjoying the game because the shooting mechanic is fun and I like the different type of weapons you had like at your arsenal, and I really enjoyed playing with those tools. So I just worked around it. Like, even in the beginning, I spent like the first 2 hours just in the first two levels dying over and over and over and over again. But I had so much fun with the shooting mechanics that I was willing to overlook that to continue to get better at the game. You can play the game slow, which is how I did it. I was very slow and methodical with things, and I found better skill at that. But from time to time, I did the whole like John Wick super action, you know, gameplay and had fun. I usually would die eventually just because you just like you lose track of everything that's going on. But overall, I enjoyed the game. I love the look of this game. Cowboy Ghost Rider, sign me up 10 out of 10 times. So yeah. I enjoyed that. I played it on PC. Keyboard and mouse isn't recommended, surprisingly. Like, it doesn't play well on keyboard and mouse. They've patched it to where it's a little bit better. It's meant to be played with controller. I believe it's available on Xbox now, and it's coming to Switch and PS4 in August. So I would recommend getting it on a console or on PC if you have a controller. But overall, I enjoyed it despite its flaws, which is why I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5.
Awesome. Did you play anything else?
I got pissed at Overwatch, but I always do. New season, season 23, 24. I don't know.
God bless.
Yeah. Wow. And then, so we didn't do July 4th just because, like, COVID and just our neighborhood's crazy. So me and Sarah drank White Claw and watched the Cats movie.
Okay.
So we saw like a video review that just made it sound horrible, and we saw clips of it, and we're like, we need to see how bad this is.
Yeah, like, yeah, this, people say it's bad. Sign Michael up.
Yep. I signed me up. So where we ended up watching that, which was just funny just to watch it, because occasionally our cats would look at the screen like
it's Chad Warden and Chad. God, you gotta be wasted to watch cats.
Oh yeah, yes. Chad or Henson, I know that person. We drank White Claw and watched Cats, and it was real bad. It was just,
how many White Claws for the whole movie?
2 or 3 each. We at one point I made like a pitcher of lemonade, and then just poured the White Claw in the pitcher of lemonade. So 2 cans that I saw, and then I forgot how many I poured into the lemonade to make it spiked lemonade. So we watched Cats. It was real bad. It was like 1 in the morning after watching it, to where we needed a
fireworks in the background.
Oh, yeah, fireworks. And my neighbors this year went all out with like house shaking fireworks. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah. Fireworks don't bother me as much as they bother other people. They don't bother my dog. They don't bother my animals. They don't bother my kids. I think they're cool and they're pretty to look at. I'm not going to light one off on a regular basis or anything like that. But they don't bother me too much.
So I'm not bothered by like the fireworks that go in the sky. My neighborhood likes to fuck around with those like quarter stick of dynamite ones.
Yeah.
And I hate those.
You don't like playing the game Gunshot or Firework?
No. Well, no, I can play Gunshot or Firework. I don't like playing Pipe Bomb or Firework, because like some of the stuff people were blowing up were just like set off every car alarm.
It seemed like a lot of people too. Yeah, like there was a lot of people like saying like the, and again, I don't know if it's just staying at home and trying to have some fun. You know, it just seemed like the fireworks were like all over the country were just a lot more.
Oh yeah,
than they normally were. So, which it sounds like driving on the high, like the best thing you could have been, at least in Michigan. It sounds like looking at a couple people's feeds, the best thing would have been driving home 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night up and down the freeway. Like you would have just seen everything.
Oh yeah, no, it was super cool. At like, as soon as it got dark out, if I look out my window, I can see Sears Tower and just every part of the sky looked like Navy Pier firework professional display, which was pretty cool. But the assholes blowing up like the quarter stick of dynamite sounding ones, fuck those people. But yeah, so we got drunk and watched Cats, and then it was like 1 in the morning and we're like, that was really terrible. Let's watch Sweeney Todd to Pelicans.
Let's see if we can top it.
No, no, we watched Sweeney Todd, which is a good musical. So we watched Sweeney Todd, and the Johnny Depp Sweeney Todd. We like it. I don't care if people don't. So we watched that, and then that was basically it. I don't know if I played any other games. And then, you know, but just the multiple games that I have to get through. And Dave as well, because Dave has two, and I think I have two more as well that we'll hopefully talk about next week.
Yeah, just got to sit down and focus on some things and get some time and not be distracted by other shiny things. All right, so we're going to hit our questions pretty quick. We've had a little bit of fun today. So, all right, so I think this one's easy. This is Ben Warren from Too Young to Be This Old, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Any racing games out there that you guys have had interest in? No.
Maybe
like the Burnout Paradise style games, like the arcade, you know, like I would love another, like, you know, I used to have fun playing like Cruising USA when I was on like 64, mm-hmm. like, but not, I'm not a sim racer. I'm not a Forza. I'm not a Gran Turismo, you know, a Assetto Corsa. None of those, like those games, like drive me nuts.
Yeah. For racing games for me, it's always been like the arcade-y Burnout. I remember I liked Split Second back in the day. The Need for Speed games, I like the last Need for Speed game that I really liked was Heat. Oh no, not Heat. Most Wanted. On the PS3 was like the last one I remember getting super into.
I remember having a lot of fun with those, like evading the cops and seeing how long mm-hmm. you could go and earning like some of the like the in-game achievements. Like those kind of games I do remember having a lot of fun with.
I would kill for a new Midnight Club. I love the Midnight Club series on the PS2.
And you like the Ridge Racer style, like the that kind of racing game too, like the Wipeout Ridge Racer kind of thing, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, like Wipeout, like futuristic racing games too. I enjoy those. I do like the Forza Horizon series just because it's like the right balance for me in terms of like I get real cars, which is kind of cool, but I also get like open world races, which I don't like racing games that are. I need the racing game to be open world. You know, I need to be able to just drive around at my leisure and then pull into a race instantaneously. And the Forza mm-hmm. Horizon series, which I didn't get into until like last year with like Project xCloud, playing that on my phone with a DualShock, as broken as that like sounds.
Yeah.
But hopefully the next Horizon I can get into, if the next one's going to be Horizon, but I think it's going to be a regular Forza game.
Right. All right, Stephen Wren writes on Facebook group, have you considered ever having a member of the community on as the third chair every couple of months or so, or is it a logistical nightmare to organize? Is it a logistical nightmare to organize? No. I thought having guests on was a PIA, but it's really not. I've handled like the Chandler stuff and the Paris stuff and the Khalif stuff like relatively easily with some of the equipment that I have now. Having guests on is far easier. Using Discord is super easy. So for, in terms of logistics, the only thing that would be weird would be like scheduling. And for the most part, like ours is Sunday nights and Monday nights. That's the easiest time for us to record. If that works for somebody, like great. If it doesn't, we'll move some parts around if we need to. Having a member of the community on, we've never really brought it up.
Yeah, but we're not against. Like that.
Yeah, I'm not against
like
it. I just think that might have to be more of a it's as bad as it sounds, more of a actual reason to do it. I mean, I guess we could try to do something cool, like maybe some kind of drawing or raffle or prize, or I don't know, but
yeah, it sounds like something like I would never be against doing. It would just come down to schedules, to be realistic. Like schedules are like the hardest thing to try and do. Just like we've had like what, 4 guests on the show in its lifetime, and
Within 6 months is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, which isn't too bad. But typically it's like you plant the seed with a guest for like a month and then try and like find a time that's available for everybody. Luckily, the last couple ones they've been relatively easy, except Laneford.
Yeah.
that's the only one we have to like work around. But like for the most part, it just comes down to the schedules, and also if the person has like a good sounding microphone, just because like phone interviews we kind of stay away from.
Yeah. We can clean some stuff up now too with some of the equipment and using Discord. Like I've been able to, like, there's a lot of, it's a lot easier than I was led to believe, or that I understood better now. Like there is a ton of things that I can do that are all within a hand's reach of me right now that you guys don't even see, and it's super easy.
Yeah. Like to Dave's point, like we would need like a topic and some sort of like reasoning to just have people on. Like we try and have our guests line up with like specific things that are going on. Typically, but we're still early on, so that can always change.
Sounds like a really cool like Patreon tier, maybe.
Maybe.
Make you pay for it. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I have no idea. So please, nobody pay for that.
No. We won't give an option.
Yeah. Because then somebody will do it, and I'll have to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So on Twitter, Robinson Rudd using hashtag #AskDigitalDays. The Last of Us 2 has a high degree of technical brilliance. What game do you rate highly that lacked technical brilliance or are flawed, but are good games all the same? My pick would be Deadly Premonition. I saw this question earlier today and I was trying to think about this and I have a really hard time answering this question.
It's funny, when I read it, I was like, oh, Deadly Premonition. And then I read the rest of the question and I was like, shit, he picked Deadly Premonition. Some games that popped up in my
head. So pretty much what he's asking for is a good game that's technically flawed.
Yes. Which might sound like a weird answer. The original Shadow of the Colossus. That game was kind of a technical mess, but it was brilliant. And now like the only way to play it is like the remastered version of it. There's like a lot of B games that are technically messes, but I like adore. Wet is a PS3 game. That game is kind of technically broken, and I think it's a great game. Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, any Bethesda game, to be completely honest, are fucking technical messes, but they're brilliant. So there's a couple. I'm trying to think of like a hidden gem. But I can't think of a hidden gem other than like, you know, I already mentioned what that is the only thing I can think of that is.
I don't
like
really have
AAA.
A good memory for this. Like my memory, like once I, like if a game just doesn't, like I said, if it doesn't grab me, like I just kind of like forget about it. But I guess a game that was somewhat of a technical mess in terms of what it was trying to accomplish and it wasn't able to do it, but was I think still had a good bone structure. Anthem.
Despite your hate for Anthem.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with Anthem was never, like, flying in the game was really cool. The weapons and what they were trying to accomplish was really cool, but they just missed the loot. Mm-hmm. So, like, in terms of, like, it not being interesting or feeling powerful, like, but the movement and the diversity in the suits that you were in, like, what they were trying to accomplish, I think was good, but they'd missed the technical part of it, of making the guns feel powerful or making it feel powerful as you level up and progress. So in terms of what they were attempting to do, I could really see it, and that's kind of why I kept going back and kept trying to play and like, okay, let's get to the end. I'm like, no, I can't. So you know, something like, not that I want to like keep dogging on that game, but it looked like something that was, they were so close, but they just missed that one piece. As a reverse to it, just as to give you guys a perspective, like Destiny as a game is not great in terms of the storytelling and the ability of what they do, but it technically nails the gameplay and nails the loot.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not playing that game because I'm, you know, like now they're trying to, you know, tell a long-term story, but it's not like I can't tell you like iconic moments of what Oryx did or what Skolas did, but I can remember beating him in a raid that had a really cool boss fight and a really cool mechanic.
Yeah, I could see that. So. That was it for the questions for this week. There was a couple more questions, but I'm saving them for next week.
Yeah, for sure. So our spotlight right now, like we talked about earlier in the show, would be just our bonus content that we've produced. If you haven't checked it out, the PS5 reveal, my Destiny interview, The Last of Us spoiler cast, All of that stuff is on the feed. Again, it's very distinct and different on the feed. It has different images, different logos, different names. So nobody can say, like, I didn't know this is what I'm listening to. Don't be that guy. So yeah, I would just definitely check out the bonus content. And again, just more eyes showing, you know, showing people the show. If you have supported us on Twitch, just double check your Prime subscription. Like, that'd be super helpful. You know, we could do a better job of consistently streaming, which we haven't been doing. So we're not in the forefront of that. So, you know, when we are streaming, if you're able to just to stop in and say hi, like, that's always super cool to have the chat engaged or have a quick 5-minute conversation with us about what's going on in the game or going on in our lives or going on in your lives. Like, that'd be a ton of fun. And then just like our social stuff still, just growing the Facebook group, growing the Discord channel, come in there, have a fun conversation about Last of Us.
I'm on a Discord. Lately, just because there's a spoiler room. So
come in there and have some cool conversations with Michael, so that he doesn't have to go down the dark holes of Reddit. Keep him on our Discord.
Yeah, maybe if you see me tweeting something at like 10 o'clock at night, be like, you could be streaming on Twitch right now, and maybe I'll just walk over to my computer.
Yeah, so just again, be sure to follow us on Twitter, the main account at Digital Days Pod. Michael's account is at The First MJC. So just, you know, if you see him tweet something random, tell him to go stream a game or tell him to post a picture of his cat. And mine is at The Dave Hunt. Again, join the Facebook group, join the Discord. If none of that stuff is working, let us know. And our Patreon, so patreon.com/Digital Days Gaming. We just released our July episode. Our July bonus episode, which is talking about why we got into podcasting and video game reviews and, you know, posting news and stuff like that. So we are still looking for ideas for other bonus episodes. So if you subscribe to the $7 tier, you get access to the bonus content, all the previous. This is the third episode that we were released. So this one is, like I said, how our origin stories. June was E3 and May was retail. I almost forgot.
Yes.
So retail lives. So like, if you hit the $7 tier now, you get access to all of those. $5, you get 24-hour early access to the podcast through Patreon. And $3 is Discord access to a private Discord channel. You can join the Discord if you're not a Patreon supporter, but there's just a separate channel for the supporters. And then there's the $1 tip jar. So you guys have been knocking it out of the park with support on Patreon. We just got a payout for the month of June, which was the highest that we've ever had. So that's amazing and loving and thankful for all of that. And if you're willing to support us on Patreon in any of those ways, that is a huge financial help for us. And it helps us tremendously. If you're willing to support us on Twitch with your Amazon Prime subscription or just a direct Twitch sub, or when I'm streaming Destiny, if you want to shade earn an emblem, gift 2 subs. That would be amazing. That'd be helpful and ways to help us subsidize some of the costs. But again, like I always say, do not feel obligated to support us on Patreon. Do not feel obligated to send us any kind of donation. You listening, sharing the show, telling your friends about Digital Days Gaming is more than enough support to grow the show. The Patreon support is just a little extra that helps us, you know, like I said, offset some of the bills. And breaking even is always the goal, and that's where we're at right now.
I don't have anything to add to that. We've been putting some reviews on YouTube. Check those out. Disintegration and Beyond Blue have been up there for like 2 weeks. And then there might be a couple more depending on what I have.
I'm going to make him do a SpongeBob one, or we're just going to take this part out and put it on there.
So. Yeah, just for the hell of it.
Do you know how much traffic we'll get from the word SpongeBob?
3 views.
Yeah, hey, that's 3 is better than 0.
The cat's bothering me now.
Yeah. All right, so the cat's getting on his lap, which means it's time for the cat telling Michael he needs to stop streaming. So, thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week. As always, keep moving forward, and as Michael tells everybody every day,
don't be a dick. See ya.